Well, tomorrow, dear friends, I begin my sabbatical. Some months of rest and renewal as I spend time with family and friends, time in the wilderness and here in the city, and time in solitude and prayer. I've been ordained a priest for 21 years, and this is the first time I have taken such a break. I am eager for some time to step back and renew myself with the big picture, to think and pray about how we are living our lives as individual people of faith and as a community of faith. At very least, I hope to come back to you in November with some restedness and some new energy, but I hope also with some perspective and maybe a better sense of proportion. Maybe you've heard that saying that goes, "Don't sweat the small stuff," and it's all small stuff, right? I need to go remind myself what that really means. And if I could wave a wand and grant every single one of you the same time of rest and refreshment, I would do that because I pray that somehow in this summertime you find some of that. I think we are all needing that this year. Now, I scheduled myself to preach today so that I could offer you my wise parting words, which, of course, I don't have any more of them because I'm so tired, right? That's the point. But anyway. And maybe it's God's weird sense of humor that on this Sunday, the gospel reading is the one we just heard. This story of John the Baptist's beheading. A story I have always found overly sensational and distracting in the narrative of what's going on around Jesus. And in 21 years of priesthood, I have never preached on it. I have always managed to avoid it. So here it is. One thing I suppose you could say, Herod clearly needs a sabbatical because his priorities are totally out of whack, right? So John's death is referred to in every one of the Gospels as happening before Jesus' death, a foreshadowing of what will happen with Jesus, just as John coming on the scene at the beginning sort of ushers in Jesus' ministry. And the Jewish historian Josephus also writes about John's death and says, Herod, who feared that the great influence John had over the masses might put them into his power and enable him to raise a rebellion, for they seemed ready to do anything he could advise, thought it best to put him to death. In this way, he might prevent any mischief that John might cause. Seems like a typical act of a despot, right? Get rid of this guy before he causes any trouble. We've seen that pattern repeated many times in history, and it will echo, of course, what happens to Jesus. One way of interpreting of what happens to him, he's trouble, so they get rid of him. But why in two of our four Gospels does the story have to be told with all this added detail to it, and especially in Mark's Gospel that we just heard, the dancing girl and her scheming adulterous mother and John's head on a platter right there? And Mark even goes on to give details about what Herod is thinking and what Herodias is thinking, all these inner thoughts and motivations, and this all stands out especially because the Gospel of Mark does not normally waste much time on details and inner motivations. Mark is the shortest of the Gospels, and his favorite word is immediately. Jesus is always immediately doing the next thing. There's sort of a breathless quality to the action in Mark. But Mark does go into detail in one other part, which is the end, the passion and the death of Jesus. The quick pace slows down near the end of the gospel, and we see Jesus betrayed and arrested, put on trial before a bored Pontius Pilate, who sees no reason to crucify this no-account nobody, but does so in order to appease the crowd. And John the Baptist's story is similar. Arrested for stirring up the crowds, but killed by the bored King Herod simply to appease his wife. The details and the characters in both of these stories bring out in sharp relief how meaningless these two deaths are on the world stage. How power is abused by the lofty for their own ends. How what matters to Herod and Pilate is ultimately just protecting their own status and position. And what clearly doesn't matter in the story are the lives of those people standing there before them in their power. Herod doesn't care about John's life. The full, human, beloved child of God that is John the Baptist. John is disposable, a nuisance, an award passed around among rich, depraved people. And Mark's hearers would have heard that same storyline apply to Jesus. A nothing, a nobody, a gadfly irritation disposed of like any other common criminal. But Jesus' storyline doesn't end there. Jesus is raised in 3 days. The God-filled person, Jesus, the incarnation, does not come to an end there in the courts of the wealthy and powerful, even if they pay no attention to God. Life is greater than the powers of this world. Despite the worst we see every day, there is deeper truth at work than salacious news and the machinations of the rich. During my sabbatical, I'm planning to do some reading and thinking about the concept of Sabbath, the practice of setting time aside to rest, to be with family, to reconnect with God, a practice observed by many of our observant Jewish brothers and sisters in our own neighborhood, but left behind by much of the Christian church. And one of my colleagues, Ryan Bonfilio, led a forum for us a few months ago to talk about what a sabbatical is and also what the commandment to observe Sabbath might be about. And I've been talking to him further since then, and now I have a nice, tidy stack of intriguing books lined up to read over the course of the next few months. Don't worry, I'll be lying around a little bit too, okay? But one of the most compelling things that Ryan pointed out to me is the idea that Sabbath can be a form of resistance. Because the world values work and more work, telling us that we find our meaning in what we can accomplish and produce. If we're busy, it shows we're important. If we're idle, it means we're of no use. We're marginal. So to intentionally stop working for a time and be idle, to produce nothing, can be a statement. We are more than what we produce. Our meaning is found in being God's children, not in the things we get done or the wealth that we generate. And furthermore, the commandment to observe the Sabbath also tells us that we need to give that same rest and realignment to others who depend upon us. Our servants, our animals, the foreigners living in our midst, in the biblical terms, Or for us, we might say our employees, our service workers, the shopkeepers, our children, our neighbors, and so on. The right to take rest is not just for the privileged few. It's for everyone. And it is our responsibility to make sure that everyone has that opportunity. And we're commanded to do it because we are made in the image of God, who rests on the seventh day. And because God freed us from slavery in Egypt and from all the forces of this world that say that we are only as good as what we produce. It is our responsibility to make sure that everyone is treated first of all as a child of God. No one is disposable. Well, it's certainly not the treatment that John the Baptist gets, or Jesus either. And it's not what most of us are used to either, I dare say. We aren't often known and loved for who God created us to be. And usually we're all in too much of a hurry living our lives immediately to know and love others in this way. And the implications of living differently are enormous. Resistance only begins to get at what it would look like to really live this fully. But this is what we say we believe. Every Sunday, in a few minutes, we will recite together the Creed, our statement of faith, which begins with the assertion that God created everything, seen and unseen. Everything, including us. Did God create us just to spin away our lives in productivity? Did God create others just to use for our own purposes? Or aren't we all meant for more? I think we know the answer to those questions. How might we live it? I'm not promising I'll be back in November with it all figured out. And nor will you return from your vacation time with the answer to it all either. But I pray that something in our hearts and our spirits is able to be nourished during this time, to grow a little bit and to change a little bit of how we live. Or as our opening prayer today says, that we will know and understand the things we ought to do, and also may have grace and power faithfully to do them. May we be part of the resurrection, of God's life, despite all odds. May we live and claim what it is to be beloved children of God, in a world full of God's beloveds. Amen.